It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC, airing in the New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at mybradio.com, mybradio.com. And that's important because our guest, I'm not letting the cat out of the bag yet, he's from Washington, D.C. This is one guest among the many that we've worked so long to get our hands on, and finally tonight, it's a dream come true. By the way, you can also access it worldwide at the on the 77 WABC app. Well, we also thank the listeners. We are consistently in the top 10 in New York AM radio, according to Nielsen ratings, so thank you for tuning us in and week out. This show, as all our listeners know by now, is all about you. Every single week, we seek out C-level executives and business leaders from such a wide range of industries, and we ask them the questions that are on your mind. Stay tuned for tonight's show, where we will discuss the world of politics and communication. Stay tuned for this amazing show. But before I do, I want to thank the great team here at Bottom Line Marketing Group, who plays such an important support role. Srilly, Eliana, Hoodie, Miriam, Dina, thank you. And to the great folks at 77 WABC, James, Matt, Chris, Lexi, Justin, thank you. Also, a special shout out to the various channels that Mind Your Business is syndicated on, C-Suite Radio, C-Suite TV, Audio Boom, and the OG Network, Player.fm, iTunes, YouTube. We have a robust YouTube channel. Every single episode is available by going to mybradio.com. mybradio.com. That's where you could pick up the recent interview that I had with James Rosebush, senior advisor to President Ronald Reagan. What about Shep Hyken, world-renowned customer service expert, or Joe Hart, president and CEO of Dale Carnegie? What about John Sculley, former CEO of Apple and Pepsi? Every single episode is available for free by going to mybradio.com. mybradio.com. Well, without further ado, going to tonight's guest. This is going to be a lot of fun. Hold on to your seats, folks. None other than Jake Turks, the senior White House correspondent for Ami Magazine. We're going to talk about a wide range of issues. We're going to talk about fake news. We're going to talk about lessons in communications from the president, social media. We have so much to talk about. Jake Turks, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Yeah, just give me 1 second as I cross Do Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis off my bucket list. And, oh, here we go. I'm ready.
Jay,
how are you?
Folks, I told you this is going to be a lot of fun. Let's jump right into the thick of it. You know, for years, you were, people think that, you know, you wave a magic wand and you get to the dream position overnight. Now, I know you for a long time. You've been out there in Iowa. You've been there with aspiring presidential candidates. And now you're the senior White House correspondent for Ami Magazine. Tell us a little bit about your journey.
So I just called my brother-in-law and I said, you know, Jared Kushner, try to get me a job at the White House. And he said, fine, is how people think it went down. But no, it didn't. I started working on this about, I'd say, if I had to pinpoint a date when I first thought maybe I'd be able to one day work out of the White House, it would go back to about 2-3 months before Donald Trump announced his candidacy, when I had my first meeting with people about perhaps making this an eventuality. But at that point, it was just planning stages, trying, as they say in the in Iowa, it was an exploratory committee.
Right.
It wasn't something I really believed would ever happen, because it is so rare that a new outlet is recognized by the White House, and because the process, as I would come to find out quickly, is extremely vague. It's not as simple as filling out an application form and just waiting for them to get back to you. There's no them, really. There are a few different entities that are involved in the process, but no single entity that takes charge. And you just got to do a lot of little things right and hope that the people who are watching find that to be the right kind of thing to do at that time, and that eventually you might have a shot at getting approved. And needless to say, it wasn't until Trump actually won that I put my final push. And this was still with the Obama people. Right. my final push to get approved. I finally got approved a few days into the Trump presidency, and here we are today.
Wow.
And I have not had my hard pass revoked yet. So things can change.
Like some others. Well, what is it like? I mean, you are an Orthodox Jew. You're there in the White House day in and day out. Tell us what it's like, being an Orthodox Jew and yet at the same time being in the highest powers, in the halls of the highest powers of government.
I don't know. It sort of reinforces the fact that, why there hasn't been someone before me, Hasidic.
Right.
It's not easy for many reasons in terms of kosher eating establishments, and it does get very lonely at times. Just logistically. And it's also a very, very high pressure job, as you can imagine. There are always cameras around, there are always microphones on. Anything you do or say will be picked up and recorded, and anyone can use anything at any point in any way they want, and it's usually not going to be in your favor. So it's very high pressure. Things change quickly. Sometimes I have to be ready to hop on a plane on just an hour's notice. Sometimes a change in schedule on the president's side will mean instead of finishing work at 6 o'clock, we don't get off until 8 or 9 o'clock. So it's like one of those things that everything's always in flux. And let me give you one example.
Sure.
The press conference that took place last month.
Sure.
Which was actually people don't realize this. This is the second press conference that he did at the White House. As president.
Right.
And so that was the day after the midterm elections.
Right.
And the previous evening, they had released the president's schedule that there was nothing on schedule for the next day and that we were off. So the following, we went to the watch parties. I didn't get to bed until about 5 a.m. And then at about 8 o'clock, I woke up. Davin checked to see if the White House sent an updated schedule. They hadn't. So I decided, I'm going to go back to sleep. I wake up at 10:30, and I realize that 20 minutes after I had gone to sleep, the White House sent out an update to their schedule that there was going to be a press conference that was going to be taking place in 45 minutes from when I was seeing that email.
Oh my gosh.
So
yeah.
The timeline is it's 10:30. Two, at that point, I have to be at the White House, inside the White House, by 11:15. That includes a commute that usually takes over an hour, even though it's only about 11 miles. It usually takes over an hour to get to the thick of D.C.
Right.
Find parking, get through Secret Service in 45 minutes, a process that usually doesn't take less than an hour and a half.
Right.
So it's one of those things where I was as responsible as I could be. The schedule said nothing.
Right.
8 o'clock in the morning, they had no update.
Right.
Usually when they do an update, it's for later in the day. They sent an update. They say there's going to be a press conference in 3 hours. I find that out an hour before the press conference. I have to get there. Long story short, I did get there, and I did not get arrested, though it was a hit or miss. It was either I'm at the press conference or I'm in jail. So either way, I would have a story.
I mean, it sounds like, okay, this maybe is not a typical day, but the challenges that you face on a day in and day out basis are just astounding. I mean,
and these are challenges that anyone covering a Trump White House would face. This is being a from Jew on top of all that makes it that much more of a challenge. So for all the listeners out there who have had the opportunity to serve as a senior White House correspondent for a national magazine and who've turned it down, I totally get you guys.
Now, actually, let's go back to that conference. I thought it was very special how you invoked belief in God in your question. Maybe you could, bring this, but let's relive that moment.
Okay, so as I told you, I had a crazy marathon that morning, and the drive, which, as I said, should have taken over an hour, ended up taking me about a half hour. There was almost no traffic. I think I hit only one red light the entire drive.
Wow.
It was highly unusual. I found a parking spot a block away from the White House. It was a big enough spot that I was able to just slip right into. I didn't have to go back and forth.
Right.
I ran the block and a half, got to Secret Service, was a security booth, was no one ahead of me, ran inside, and as I get out of the security booth, I see the last two reporters walking into the north portico entrance. Now, as soon as the last reporter is in, they close the door, and essentially whoever's in is in, whoever's out is out, and that's it. There's nothing you could really do at that point. So the way you're supposed to access the north portico is you're supposed to go through the west wing briefing area, and you're supposed to whatever. There's like a whole process, which would have taken an additional minute and a half, which I didn't have.
Right.
So instead, I just started dashing across the north lawn, which is let's just leave it at that. Not something that you want to do more than once in your life, unless you really 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 have to. It's the kind of thing where you either do it once and say you did it, or you do it once and they don't allow you back in. They were very understanding, the Secret Service, and they must have figured that I had a rather interesting morning. So
right.
I got in, and then as I get into the East Room, I'd never seen so many reporters in the East Room before. There were over 200 in there. And, I mean, the place was packed. Officially, they only give one seat and one camera position per outlet. So, but they also had a lot of foreign press. So it was really, really crowded. And even though officially I had a seat reserved, wherever my seat would have been, they were all taken already.
Right.
And I wasn't able to just go up and down and try to figure out where my seat was.
Right.
Though, what I did notice was that there was one seat in the second row that was still open that was reserved for somebody else. But I made a quick calculation that, hey, this guy isn't here yet. I'm the last one in. They're not coming at this point. So this is second row seat, close to the center. It was like right behind Acosta, practically.
Right.
Acosta being the
right,
the
of course,
CNN,
Jim, CNN, course, Jim Acosta, of course.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, I have to say that for those keeping track at home.
Right.
You know,
okay.
To set the, like, establish a record here.
Right.
Okay, so I'm sitting there. I'm all out of breath. The program's about to start. And I'm like, okay, what kind of question am I going to ask? Because I knew he was going to call on me. I figure there's no way in the world that I was able to overcome so many obstacles, most of which I left out just for sake of brevity.
Right.
There's no way I could overcome so many obstacles and then not get called on. There's obviously a reason why I have to be there. So I figured, you know what? And then it hit me that it was exactly 2 years to the day that I had asked President Trump, then President-elect Trump, about the fact that he won in the first place. And this was right after he gave his victory speech
right at
3:30 in the morning. So he's walking down from the podium on the way to the exit, and he walks right by me, and I say, Mr. President-elect, what would you attribute this victory? And he points up to the ceiling and says, it was God.
Nice.
And he seemed very stunned and very numb and very much in shock. And it was a very uncharacteristic type of answer of his, because for a politician to see someone who looks very religious to say an answer like that makes sense. But for Trump, it was always about, I'm a great leader. I'm a winner. I surround myself with the best people. I only hire the best people. For him to acknowledge that it was God and that he had no way of understanding how he won that night, I thought was very revealing. And so I figured, you know what? Maybe God wants me to invoke him. And that's why. I mean, he never clarified God one way or another whether or not he wanted me to do this. I just want to be very, very clear. At no point did I have voices in my head directing me to do anything on God's behalf. I just figured some supernatural power brought me here, and the fact that it was exactly two years to the day after after Trump had mentioned that God had made him win. So I asked him, I gave him the opportunity when he called me to talk about what kind of understanding he's gotten about the role God plays in the execution of the office of presidency. He didn't really want to elaborate too much. He chose to throw the vice president under the bus instead by saying how much the vice president believes in God. And then he allowed me two follow-up questions, which were about the midterms.
So, do you have any type of interactions with the Vice President Pence?
Not as much as the president, because the vice president has usually he has his own schedule. He has his own press team. So if I want to cover events that the vice president's at, I could do that. But my default would be covering the president. So when the vice president went to Israel, for example, I was part of right. I was part of his entourage there. When the vice president went to
Overseas.
About 2 years right. ago when he went. Yeah, but no, a different time when he went to St. Louis to help clean up at a vandalized right. cemetery. We sent a reporter to cover that as well. Gotcha. So we do cover the vice president a lot of big events that he does. But my default is the president.
My guest this evening is none other than the chief political correspondent for Ami Magazine. He is a senior White House correspondent, none other than Jake Turks. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hey, Joe, give me a minute. I'm going to run the numbers and circle back next week. Post it on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just get it up there.
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saflis on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505. That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group. Marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
Finally, a payroll service that does things your way. At Brands Paycheck, you're not a number, you're a partner. Brands Paycheck's personalized payroll solutions ensure that your business receives your financial information the way you want it. From complete payroll services and time tracking to benefits administration and HR solutions, Brands Paycheck helps streamline your business's payroll process and maximize productivity. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation. Brands Paycheck services a wide range of industries nationwide, including hospitality, transportation, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, finance, retail, healthcare, real estate, and more. Learn why companies nationwide rely on Brands Paycheck. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation today or visit online at BrandsPaycheck.com. That's BrandsPaycheck.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. My guest this evening is none other than Jake Turks, the Jake Turks, known by so many. Of course, all readers of Ami Magazine know him good and well. And we wanted to have him on for a while. Jake, thank you so much for taking up your precious time. I'm not going to ask you if there's a if there's any news going on right now, because the news changes that fast. But thank you for taking up your precious time for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
It is absolutely wonderful to be here, and as hard as you think you've been chasing after me, I promise you I've been trying that much harder to get onto your program.
Jake, you're great. That's very kind. Okay. Now, you know, let's talk about this. I mean, Ami Magazine is around, what now, 7-8 years, a fantastic, you know, vehicle for the Orthodox Jewish community. Senior White House correspondent, chief political correspondent, you know, what do all those terms mean? And did I get it right? And feel free to correct me if I got it wrong.
Yeah, so chief political correspondent is what my title was until January 2017, when I started covering the White House, and then it became White House correspondent, and then it became senior White House correspondent.
Nice.
So
nice.
We dropped the chief political correspondent along the way.
Got you. Well, I remember those days when you were out in Iowa. Man, actually, when did you jump into the political scene? I mean, how far back does this go? And don't tell me when you were in kindergarten, because I know it's probably true. But okay,
I will not. It was a few years after kindergarten. First of all, just full disclaimer.
Yeah.
I despise the test and any other kind of terminology you want to apply to my feelings about politics. I absolutely resent it. I hate both parties with the equal burning passion. I hate the entire system. That's why I'm so good at poking holes into political talking points. And the day after an election, I don't wake up depressed because one party won. I don't wake up euphoric because the other party won. I just wake up numb to the fact that we are doomed to this two-party system. There is no replacement. Nothing's ever going to change. Third party is not the answer. So I'm extremely cynical. I hate this job. I hate the fact that
your boss is listening.
You
know
that. The fact that
okay.
I'm sorry. No, I just want to clarify. I hate the fact that this job has to exist, but now that it exists and no one else is doing it, might as well be me. So it's not like I always loved politics. It's not like I grew up among politicians. It's not like I get starstruck when I see politicians. It's literally the exact opposite. In fact, I believe that politicians, for the most part, are actually good people. As individuals, I love almost all of them. And unfortunately, it's the system that corrupts them. And I could go through the trajectory if we have time, maybe later. I don't want to get sidetracked. So, because the story is, even the abridged version of the story is long enough. So it's shortly after kindergarten, a few years after kindergarten, right. We had this process we went through called bar mitzvah, which at the time felt like a lifetime apart from kindergarten, but essentially 8 years at this point in our lives. It's not really that long. So a couple of years after kindergarten, had my bar mitzvah, and one of the guys in the shul that I attended as a bar mitzvah present gave me a signed letter on official White House stationery from then President Bill Clinton. So, and he actually got like 50 such cards signed by President Clinton. He was very active in the political arena. Mm-hmm. He got 50 such cards signed, and throughout the Clinton presidency, he would give one to each bar mitzvah boy that he knew well enough. So what resulted was every, once in a while, I'd see him, I'd ask him, we would talk politics. I'd say, hey, what's going on and what's the latest in the political world? What are you working on? This and that. In 2010 or 11, whenever AMI launched. Mm-hmm. So I started working for AMI from the first year, but I wasn't doing politics because, like I said, I hated it. I hate it more now that I have gotten to know it so much more up close and personal, but I never thought of doing politics. But, the 2012 elections were underway, and I decided to call up this individual, whose name is Commissioner Howard Winkler from Los Angeles. And I say, hey, Howard, what's going on? Are you backing any candidates? And he says, yes. I said, who? Newt Gingrich. I say, oh, why do you think Gingrich would be the best? And he went through his talking points and told me why he liked Newt. And I asked, like, half-jokingly, like, hey, you know Newt so well, you think you could set up an interview with him? He's like, yeah, probably could. And that was the brother-in-law who knows Jared moment for me.
Right.
He called me up 2 weeks later and said, can you fly out to California tomorrow? I secured you a half-hour slot. Now, this was early enough in the campaign that Newt was doing well enough that he could have won. He was a very big deal. He was highly sought after at that point. Right. And I freaked out because I'd never done a political interview, and Newt is a very intimidating individual to interview. Just as a first interview he's a fascinating figure. Let's put it that way. So
I remember that article. I remember that article. I remember it.
Well, that was the first one, and then after the article, and actually it was the editor-in-chief of AMI, Yitzhak Frankfurter, who did most of the article, and I just saved two questions, like, at the end, I just so that I could say I did it. And it was after that people were coming over to me, and this is just going to give you a little insight into the kinds of friends I have.
Right.
All my closest and best friends are coming over to me and telling me how, oh, you just got lucky, it's a one-time thing, the guy doesn't have a chance of winning anyway, blah, blah. And I said, no, I really don't like doing politics, and I'm never going to do another political interview again. And they're like, yeah, you're just being a cop-out. You're saying that because you can't get any other candidates. And I said, no, I don't want to try to get other candidates, but if I set my mind to it, I can. They're like, yeah, right, let me see. So I said, all right, I went out into the field. I tracked down all the other candidates for president, and I interviewed all of them. The first one I did after Gingrich, the one I did by myself, was Ron Paul. And I don't know if he had ever met an ethnic-looking Jew right. like myself by that point. It was a really, really fun interview. And from there, we got Santorum and Romney and Herman Cain and whoever else was around.
Right.
And I realized at that point that there was no one in the Orthodox Jewish media circles who was covering national politics. Everybody was doing local and state politics. No one was covering national politics. And I figured, let's create a niche for ourselves and see how well it takes off. And it took off very well. The demand was there, and we've only been looking up ever since.
Amazing. Let's fast forward 2018. You know the state of politics today. Now I know you don't want to talk too much about it, but perhaps there's any. Now, my question isn't if someone should enter the field of politics, but perhaps you could just give your version of the state of politics today in 2018.
The state of politics. So what? One question people ask: will history see Trump as a successful president or not? Mm-hmm. And based on how I process that question is how I'm going to answer your question. And that is, it's just so early. Typically historians don't assess a president's overall success until 20 years after his presidency had come to an end. That's just any regular standard president. If you see, Harry Truman, the way he was despised in his time, and then by now he's ranked right. between number 5 and 10 of the best presidents of all time. You've seen a lot of presidents who are either loved or hated while they were president, who have gone through a complete a reevaluation in the years and decades following the presidency. So what Trump has done, or what the Trump phenomenon has brought about in the political arena, is a just utter sense of confusion on every single metric when it comes to assessing and analyzing politics. And the first question is this something that is going to become the norm? The second question is, if it isn't, is it something that is going to is it going to blow back the other way? Meaning,
right.
A, are we going to have another Trump type of president following him, like a Michael Avenatti or a Corey Lewandowski? Or are we going to have an even more bland, even more rigid type of president just to counteract the Trump years? Or might it be, in all likelihood, something even more removed than either of those two options, one that we can't even imagine at this point? So the world of politics has changed. There's no question about that. But because we're still living in the thick of it, it's very hard to give a really good explanation about how it's changed, because we are not going to see the full picture, for sure not until Trump is out of office. Not that I'm advocating one way or another for Trump to be out of office as soon as possible.
Understood.
I'm just saying, from a speculative right. standpoint, right. it's very hard to get a full grasp of how much politics has changed. But it's definitely not a short answer. Even if I wanted to condense it to a short answer, there's just too many points to have to go through.
Jake, the next question that I want to ask you, we're just going to have to take a commercial break. But I just want to tease everyone. The next question. Would Trump have won without Twitter? We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hey, Joe, give me a minute. I'm going to run the numbers and circle back next week. Post it on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just get it up there.
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great, so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saflis on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505. That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group. Marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
Okay, so you're considering a comprehensive medical exam, but you haven't decided where. At Elytra Health in New York City, we know you have a tight schedule and that you only want the best. We also know you have choices to consider. Well, consider that you could have a world-class executive longevity exam at Elytra's state-of-the-art Manhattan Center for Life and Longevity, right in downtown New York City. Think about the fact that the experts at Elytra Health are a hand-selected staff with more than 30 years of experience in executive exams and concierge medicine, and that top doctors in the area refer their patients to Elytra. Something else to weigh is that cardiac imaging, cancer screening, labs, and all other testing is completed in a single five-hour visit with white-glove service. Plus, you'll receive the results, advice, and follow-up coordination before you leave. Finally, consider how easy it is to get peace of mind from an Elytra exam now by visiting ElytraHealth.com. That's E-L-I-T-R-A Health.com. Elytra Health. Well, above all.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis. My guest this evening is none other than the senior White House correspondent for Ami Magazine, Jake Turks. Jake, we got to come right back at what we left off, and that was, would Donald Trump be in the White House without Twitter?
And the answer is absolutely yes, because here's why.
Okay.
If you really believe that Twitter is what got Trump elected, then there are so many other questions you have to answer, which is the fact that he was between 75% and 98.1%, if you go from the most charitable model put out by 538 or the most extreme one put out by Huffington Post. Odds of Trump winning the presidency were between 25% and 1.9%. So to say that any single factor, if you remove any single factor, he wouldn't be president, is to completely disregard the insurmountable, overwhelming, ridiculous just odds that he had to overcome in order to win in the first place. So the Trump victory, I mean, people can rationalize how he won, but it's, well, let's put it this way. If you believe that there was some kind of a conspiracy with Russian collusion or whatnot, then the Russians would have just had to up their game a little bit. Nice. But aside from that, if you want to explain it just in a natural order of things, you can't explain his victory altogether. So to say, take one thing out of the equation and he loses, I don't know. I don't buy it.
Okay, but would you agree that it was definitely a big factor? Or social media in general, would you say is a big factor in his victory?
Well, what if I asked you a day before the elections, Yitzhak, do you feel perhaps that if Trump didn't have Twitter, he might be doing a little bit better? And that would have been a very legitimate question, and I'm sure a lot of people would have said, you know what, yes, I think Twitter's hurt him. So To say that it all comes down to Twitter, when at the time when he was doing so poorly in the national polls and his victory seemed like completely impossible. And when I say impossible, yes, we all know people who say, yeah, I knew Trump was going to win. I predicted it a half a year out and all that stuff. Trump himself, as I mentioned earlier, Trump himself did not believe he was going to win. He believed he was going to lose. He did not have a victory speech planned for that night. His top advisors, I was at his headquarters. I was at Trump headquarters the entire election night. All of his top advisors, they were there. They believed that they were going to leave early that night. Their internal polling showed it was going to be a disaster. They were not expecting to win. He was not expecting to win. At the time, they couldn't explain how he won. In hindsight, yeah, he did a rally in Michigan. He spent time in Wisconsin. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, we really shouldn't be able to rationalize how he won. And that's the bottom line, I think.
Moving along to a delicate subject, although if there's anyone that I would love to ask this question to, it's you, Jake. Fake news. Can you explain it? And that's my first question. My second question is, can you explain how Trump deals with it and actually, you know, mastered the art of dealing with fake news?
Okay, fake news doesn't exist in so much as it's not a thing, rather a concept. And the way the concept is applied is usually one of two ways. Either it is to dismiss a viewpoint that emanates from a bubble beyond your own bubble, or B, it's to help those within your bubble identify which talking points to stay away from. But either way, it's just a groupthink kind of terminology. Not that there isn't news that is fake. There is. There's always been. There always will be. But at this point, people just use fake news like people use Hitler comparisons. It's just a way of ending an argument. It's just the ace card. You slap it down on the table, and then the conversation's over because the person you're dealing with either agrees with you that the other side is fake news and worthy of being dismissed, or the other side calls you fake news in return, and then you're both even, but then you just go eat your own way. So fake news, it's just a meaningless buzzword.
Interesting. But okay, so you know, let's go back to the to the incident at the press conference in November. You, as you mentioned, you were sitting one row behind Jim Acosta. Now,
yes.
Trump will always, right, label CNN fake news. Now, yep. Jim Acosta had gotten up there and acted more like an activist than a journalist. Right, I think that's fair to say. Right, he was, or am I wrong there?
Go ahead. You're on a roll. Go ahead.
Right. Okay.
I'm not gonna
stop
you.
He was acting, you know, certainly more as an activist. Okay. So, does the president have a point there when he's pushing back on a particular station and saying fake news, when the journalist is certainly acting more as an activist than a journalist?
Right. So let's be clear. There is a tremendous amount of news that is fake out there. I'm not in any way granting allowances for that. It definitely happens all the time, all sides. That said, the role of a journalist was never actually fully defined. There is no litmus test. There is no set of prerequisites that someone has to follow. There's no test that you have to take that after this, if you pass it, you are a journalist. There are no set of official rules. Journalists basically make up their own rules, and certain things have become standard and have become the norm. But what we see in the Trump era is that journalists are forced to take on different kinds of responsibilities. The activist journalist has existed for at least 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. but and obviously will keep getting worse now in an era of social media. But what people don't understand about the position Acosta's in, and I've gotten to know him quite well over the last couple of years. He's a very, very nice guy in person. I've had the opportunity to introduce a lot of friends to him, a lot of friends who all they knew about him is the Acosta they saw on TV, and then they had a conversation with him and they were blown away by how different he is as a person. And the reason why this is important to consider is Acosta is in a very tricky position. He has to defend his company. His company is being attacked. He has a responsibility to defend his company. Now, you might say, who says that that's a journalist's job? Who says they have to protect and defend their company? Well, that's part of the beauty of being a journalist, is that like you just sometimes gotta incorporate things on the fly. And no outlet has been attacked more than CNN by the president. In all fairness, the president feels he hasn't been attacked by an outlet more than by CNN, and he feels he's only defending himself and hitting back. I'm not taking sides here. I'm just pointing out Acosta's responsibility is to his audience. His responsibility is to the people who employ him. And as the senior correspondent for CNN, this is the position that he feels he's been thrust into, and he has to protect and defend his company, his brand, and represent his audience in a way that's genuine to them. And when the president said CNN should be ashamed of themselves for hiring you, something along those lines, if CNN has a problem with the job Acosta's doing, then it really should be they who revoke his credentials. It shouldn't be the White House. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, if Ami Magazine has a problem with the job I'm doing, they could revoke my credentials in theory. They wouldn't, because I'm the only hard pass carrying member of Ami. So if they do that, then they forfeit their only hard pass. So it it wouldn't make sense. Right. But essentially, unless I'm posing a security threat to the president of the United States, in fact, let me put it to you this way:
sure.
there've only been three people in history, three journalists in history, that goes back about to Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm.
Only three people who've had their hard pass, permanent White House credentials revoked. One of them was caught red-handed stealing from the office of the deputy press secretary. The second one was discovered to have ties to a foreign spy agency. And the third one refused to relinquish his mic for 7 seconds after he was told to. So just to put it into perspective, and the reason why the judge ruled the way he did, the reason why he ruled against the Trump administration, even though he was a Trump-appointed judge, is because there was no precedent to say that if someone does not give up his mic right away, you revoke his credentials. It has never been – there's never been anything close to that before. And if the outlet is okay with him acting that way, as disrespectful as it came across to many people, no doubt – then the outlet's decision is what should really set the pace. And then the fact that the White House released a doctored video somewhat that made it look like he was more aggressive than he had actually been. I was sitting right behind him. I saw the exchange. It was awkward. His hand went up reflectively because he was in the middle of asking his question, which is one of the most stressful things in the world, to ask a question of the president of the United States in that kind of setting when you know you have over 100 million people watching you. It's always a very unnerving thing. Suddenly, someone like standing right alongside you trying to pull the mic away, his hand went up reflectively for a second, and he tried being polite to her. He said, "Pardon me, ma'am." And he tried asking his question. And look, you know what? I got three questions that day.
Right.
Acosta had only had one, and he was trying to get a second. So it's not like what he was trying to do was that unreasonable. I would never act that way, to be clear. But it wasn't that outrageous the way the White House tried playing it up after the fact.
Folks, my guest this evening is none other than the senior White House correspondent for Ami Magazine, Jake Turks. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? Well, look no further than websitewithbrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit websitewithbrains.com. The experienced team at Website with Brains will plan, write, design, and program a stunning and informative website that combines simplicity and flexibility. Get ready to look great online and take your business to the next level. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500.
Missed an episode of Mind Your Business? We've got you covered. Check out our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, to hear interviews with business executives and thought leaders whenever and wherever you want. That's Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC and worldwide at mybradio.com and, of course, on the 77 WABC app. In case you're just tuning in, you're missing a really fun show. Jake Turks. He is the senior White House correspondent for Army Magazine. He's got one hectic schedule, day in and day out. Earlier in the interview, he talked about the press conference back in November, where he finally got to sleep at 5 a.m. Didn't know, well, not that he didn't know. It wasn't announced, the press conference given by President Donald Trump that was to take place in a few hours. And lo and behold, somehow, with the hand of God, he made it there in time and, of course, fired off three questions. And he discussed a lot of that. And he had a great explanation for Jim Acosta and CNN. Really great perspective. Jake, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Yeah, we should definitely do this again, I think.
Thank you. You're invited back, okay. That's for sure.
All right.
Now, in your industry, this is an understatement. You know, there are curveballs that are tossed your way. You shared some of them earlier in the show. So you're there as a senior White House correspondent, yet you have to fire off articles. There are deadlines for Ami. How do you make it all happen, and how do you stay sane? That's also part of my question.
Well, you stay sane by never pretending to have been sane altogether, and
I knew you wanted me to ask you that question, so I had to fire it. I had to squeeze it.
Yeah, that's fine. It was a perfect setup, and I saw where you go with that, and yeah.
Hey, you deal with this all day long, you know. This is a piece of cake for you.
Yeah, you really. I mean, just politics in general, any industry, even where you're like. You're always seen. You have to have really thick skin. You have to deal with the same kinds of questions 100,000 times. I mean, every year, like the 2 months leading up, and I'm not saying this to give people ideas. The 2 months leading up to Hanukkah, to the White House Hanukkah party, I'm going to get hundreds and hundreds of requests for people who want to get a ticket to the party. It's something that, like, you got to answer number 398 the same way you answered number 4. You can't lose your cool, because each person thinks that they thought of the idea just now themselves, and it's a sure thing, and I'll hook them up, and I try being, you know, very polite. So this is just one aspect. Another aspect is, as I mentioned earlier, people are always watching you. There are always cameras on. There are always microphones on. There are two types of microphones. There are always cameras running somewhere, and you never know what might be streaming live at any point. Not just in one of the big networks. Anything could be streaming on anybody's handheld device. You could be on someone's Facebook, Instagram channel, right. YouTube channel at any point. But besides that, the White House also has microphones where. And this is something that all journalists, all the correspondents have been there for many years. They'll all corroborate, even though they've never actually shown the evidence of this. But they say that any conversations that take place in the press area are subject to being listened to by White House officials. Whoever these officials are, whether they're just Secret Service, whether they're press aides, is not clear. But there is this belief, a very strong belief, that these kinds of eavesdroppings take place on a regular basis. So besides the pressure, besides the hectic schedule, besides everything always being in flux, and besides always being watched, you have to be mindful of everything that you say all the time to everybody and anybody in any circumstance in every setting. And you never know when someone comes over to you for a conversation and they might have something on you. They're just trying to get it on the record so they could destroy your career. You never know that. And that's why journalists are the most paranoid people when it comes to having conversations with. Yeah. Because journalists know how easy it is to destroy the careers of other journalists. Mm. And all of that is part of the package, the bigger package. Then there are the writing deadlines. Then there are travel arrangements that have to be made. There are so many things that have to happen at the same time while all the other things are happening that it is a lot of fun. What can I tell you?
Wow. Now, as part of the pressure, it comes along with some fascinating and, the question is, would I say a joyful experience that I don't know, but so many out there are so curious about flying on Air Force One. What, you know, could you describe what that's like?
It's like flying on a regular airplane, But I mean, there are two parts to Air Force One. There's a part where the president is, which is basically off limits, at least has been to me so far. And the just regular part where the reporters are. Now, the president or the press secretary or deputy press secretary might pop their head out the door and answer some questions at some point on throughout the journey. But otherwise, you're sort of confined to your own part of the airplane.
Gotcha. What's flying like coach? What are the amenities on the plane?
You know what? How about I'll take you one day and then you'll be able to answer
the
question yourself.
Hey, you know,
No.
Okay.
You know what?
You made it sound like
I'm already working on the next six Hanukkah parties.
I'm
done with that.
I was going to say, you made it sound like it's easier than getting into the Hanukkah party.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Of course not.
Yeah. They typically have about 12 to 15 slots for journalists. Because you have to realize a lot of the seats, the few seats that they already have, it's for a combined media and aides and staffers and security. Like, they're so hyper-limited. And every one reporter that you put there means one official or advisor has to get off. So it's definitely in high demand and something that does not happen very often.
Wow.
Tell you that.
Jake, we're approaching the close of this very, very fun interview. I want to remind the listeners, by Tuesday morning, this entire episode will be up. All you have to do is go to mybradio.com, mybradio.com, in order to access this great interview. Jake, you know, any final takeaways? As you know, the primary listenership of this show are business owners, small business owners, executives, and medium-sized businesses. And one of the reasons that we wanted to seek you out is, you know, to put a little bit of a light moment here as we close out 2018. And also because at the end of the day, business deals with pressure. We deal with unknowns day in and day out. And someone who deals with unknowns day in and day out is someone like yourself, a senior White House correspondent. So what final takeaways could you share in the next 2 minutes with the listeners of Mind Your Business?
So in my industry, you always have to have answers to questions. You always have to have responses. You always have to be able to readjust. Even sometimes you could have been planning something for weeks and months, and the last second you have to completely readjust your game plan in a way that no one even notices that the game plan is being readjusted, and you just got to pretend that was the plan all along.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the best bit of advice I can give is that sometimes if someone puts you on short notice and says, hey, can you give me some like good solid advice for the closing of the show? And you pretend like you planned the answer and this is exactly where you meant to go, but really you had no time to prepare and you just say the first thing that comes to mind and it sounds good and it sounds smart. Just bear in mind that a lot of the times you listen to these kinds of shows, the person is just saying something that sounds good at the moment and might not be the best possible advice. I'm not saying that my advice is necessarily good advice. I'm just saying anyone who gives you good advice on the fly, even if it seems rehearsed, it might just think into it a little bit before acting on that advice is what my closing advice is.
That's great advice. By the way, we should give a shout out. Talk about your book just before we head off. You have a book out there. How can people access it? Talk about it at a drop.
It's definitely out there. It's called Stop, Drop, and LOL. You should be able to find it on Amazon. And it's a very funny book. We, the committee charged with putting the book together. We took a few different concepts and explored at great length. We go into some of the fascinating and bizarre and outright ridiculous aspects of history, some interesting takes on the millennial generation, social media, different things that impact our world, past, present, and also a little bit future. We go through how the different presidents of the United States would have used Twitter if they had Twitter. There's a lot of hypothetical There's also a lot of good advice. For example, I break down how you can successfully invade the Russia in the winter, how you could pull it off. Many have tried. None have succeeded, really, officially. But I lay out how you could successfully invade Russia in the winter. A lot of other things, like how you could become the dictator of a country, what you need to know in order to become a dictator, how to overthrow a dictator. You have to know how to do that first. How to, and this is actually very, very popular with readers, how to spend $1 billion, five different creative ways how to spend $1 billion, but about 40 different ways how you could actually earn $1 billion, different categories of ways how you could become a billionaire, which I just put out there to the public. Anyone who buys my book can, or borrows the book, or copies the book illegally at a Xerox machine, can access that information. It's just, it's my way of giving back to the community. So you're welcome,
folks. Oh man, what a fun edition here of Mind Your Business. That was Jake Turk, senior White House correspondent for Omni Magazine. That wraps up another great edition of Mind Your Business, and tune in again next Sunday night for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.